So when I was six, I had a little pencil and ruler, and I made a newspaper every single week. It was the Guth Gazette, and I made that without fail. In fact, one time, I missed a weekend because I had the chicken pox, and I was like, I gotta catch up. Like, the paper, I blew deadline. Like, I was really stressed out about it.
I was like six. Took this journalism class just on a complete whim and ended up loving it. I loved telling stories. I loved talking to people. I was like the business manager the first year, and then my last year, I was editor of the paper.
And so I just kind of started in sorting through those and reading both papers here. I just kind of learned the cadence of crime reporting, and just kind of it was always in the back of my head. And then I'm one of those who, you know, started working at the college paper and never really looked back.
Now, from WGN Radio News, a look back at the day that was and a deeper look into issues and stories with Andrea Dahlers and the reporters on 720 WGN.
Happy Monday to everybody. 7-Eleven on 720 WGN. Greatest station in the world. Greatest city in the world. Thanks for being a part of the program tonight. A very special treat for you tonight. We're going to talk to three different reporters, Ryan Burrow, Tamon Bradley, and Dina Bear, all of our own, Chicago's very own, WGN Radio and TV, for very good reason. Tamon's going to be joining us after 7:30 with some new numbers in the mayoral poll. The polls in Chicago open in less than 24 hours now. We'll be selecting a new mayor. And Dina Bear will join us. She is back on her way back to Chicago from the Vatican, where she was for the last week covering the pre-sex abuse clergy summit at the Vatican. Just amazing stories and amazing packages if you saw on WGN TV that she did. She's going to be joining us about 7:45. But first and foremost, we start with one of our very own, WGN's Ryan Burrow. How you doing, Ryan?
I'm doing great, Andre. How are you?
Ryan, I know over the past week, since February 15th, over the past 10 days, you have slept, what, maybe a total of 6 hours, if that.
Yeah, good balance of caffeine and just pure energy, I guess. And it's been a wild ride, I think, for everyone in the Chicago. I think what Rob Elgis said, that we crammed a full year's worth of news in the span of a week in Chicago or something like that. It's been incredible.
Absolutely. We're talking about three cases, three stories that you covered for us and for ABC National Radio News. So your voice was heard all over the Midwest and on ABC affiliates all over the country with the Aurora mass shooting, the Jussie Smollett incident. From start to finish, well, from start to midway finish to the charges. And, of course, the R. Kelly saga, which is still unfolding as we speak at a River North McDonald's right now, Ryan, as I'm sure you're well aware that R. Kelly is not for something to eat. But I wanted to talk to you a little bit. I mean, that's it's such a big deal. I think people sometimes take that for granted. They hear certain reporters on certain stories and not realize that these are national stories. So I wanted to start with Aurora and kind of touch base with you for how your day began that day when you found out that this Aurora mass, the warehouse shooting was unfolding, and you just went right out there.
Yeah, you know, I mean, it was a Friday afternoon. That's usually when we can kind of start, powering down a little bit, maybe wrap some things up and start thinking maybe a little bit about next week and getting ready for the weekend, because, you know, we've got to rest just like everyone else has to rest. And then all of a sudden, you know, about 1:15-ish, I get an email from, actually it was our New York office that asked, are you seeing these tweets about Aurora? And of course, I was oblivious to them at that point. Mm-hmm. And then we started seeing things developing, active shooter situation, massive amounts of police presence, more tweets coming. And at that point, I was getting emails and text messages from both WGN and ABC saying, yeah, we think we need you to get out there as soon as you can. So I actually, at that point, I actually had my son. I was at home waiting for my wife to get home. So mm-hmm. We had a little bit of a lull of about 10 minutes. And like, that just feels like an hour, you know? I mean, I knew she was only 10 minutes away, so she could go grab my son and I could be on my way to Aurora. And it just felt like forever, because you just saw more and more tweets coming. We didn't have a lot more information, but you knew something big was going, and you just wanted to get there as fast as you could.
Yeah.
And by the time I got there, it was about the time all the TV stations were finally arriving. We don't have the advantage of the helicopter, but it's not like we can actually get to the site. We walked up as close as we could get, but all the information, and Aurora police did great, just giving us as much information as they could as soon as they could give it. And Yeah, it was wild and definitely a disturbing story at that, too.
Ryan, what's it like when you get to a scene like that? You have covered horrible stories like this in the past. This is an active shooter situation. You're arriving at the scene, and at one point, I think in your reports, you were saying you're surrounded by law enforcement from all over the state coming in to help and all over the suburban area. What's it like when you get to a scene like that and it's pretty much mass chaos? And at some point, they're telling you stay away, too.
Absolutely. I mean, there are times when, you know, we don't want to become a part of the story. And, you know, police are usually pretty good at kind of putting us in one area to keep us away and also give us a central spot to get information if need be. This is a pretty big warehouse, and they kind of let us go wherever we wanted to. I mean, I did walk up to the front door. I mean, it's not like I could get inside, but, you know, you try to figure out. You know, you're constantly scheming in your brain. Okay, where do I need to be? Where would be the best place to get a story? Do I need to talk to people? Do I need officials? Do I need just to monitor feeds at this point? And it's a tough balance because, you know, you go and stand in front and nothing happens. And in the meantime, you know, you've got colleagues who are like, oh, I'm talking to these people, or we've got a great helicopter shot, or this person's at the hospital. And you know, you're only one person. You can only be in one place at a time. So you do the best you can. You try to get as much information from various sources that you can, and you try to pull it all together as best as you can. But yeah, in those situations, you want to be everywhere, and you just can't.
Right. And this is a story, too, that just keeps going. So I know at some point you do have to sleep, but then the next day it becomes recovery, focusing on the victims, their families. It's a delicate story to handle, too, and that's got to be a balance for you, too.
It is, and I know that you handled the victim perspective. You know, that's when we run into these kind of mass casualty situations, and I've done this for Parkland, I've done it for Las Vegas, and in both of those cases with ABC, they sent two reporters, me and either Jim Ryan or Alex Stone, or that's kind of the way they did. I know with the Orlando shooting, at the nightclub shooting, they sent two reporters too, and you kind of divvied up. You say, okay, you take the investigation, I'll handle the victims and community response. And it's a shame that we've kind of been able to figure that out because there have been so many mass casualty situations. But if we can kind of figure out, okay, you've got this aspect, I've got this aspect, then you don't have to worry about doubling up work, doubling up information, and you can really hone in on what it is that you need to do to tell the story that you need to tell.
And I think you even have, I don't even want to say a bigger challenge, but a bigger opportunity to tell the story because you're not using a television camera. So you are literally painting the picture and describing a visual for all of us to try to picture and listen to.
You're trying to, but keep in mind, too, you know, I'm part of Tribune Company and ABC, and a lot of times they do need visuals. Mm-hmm. And so you might pull up to a scene and you're the first person there. Hey, we've got a camera guy. We need you to go on with something. We need you to show us something. And, you know, being multimedia, you got to get the camera going. You got to shoot some footage. You got to tweet it out. I mean, there are a lot of things that people want you to do, and you got to try to sort it all out in your mind. You've done it before, too. You know, you get to a scene and there's something happening. It's like, oh, you want to take a picture, but I need to go live, but I need to talk with the station, but I need to talk with my source. And it's just a lot of things tugging at you at any given moment. And, you know, with this aspect, I mean, I literally was driving to Aurora. My cell phone was blowing up with ABC emails, with WGN emails, you know, Rose producer, hey, can we have you on? How far out are you? And it's like, you know, I'm only in Lyle at this point. I'm not quite there yet. And you're just trying to make it all work, and you're trying to do it as safely as possible, too.
And it's the adrenaline of chasing the story, too. We're talking to WGN's Ryan Burrow about three of the top stories in the nation that he covered nationally over the past 10 days, the Aurora shooting, Jussie Smollett, and R. Kelly, which is still going on right now. I know that's what you were on all day. Ryan, hold on one quick second. We're going to take a quick break, take care of some business, and come back and talk to you about the Smollett case and R. Kelly and what's next with the both of those. More after this on 720 WGN.
Back to Andrea Darlis and the reporters on WGN Radio.
723, 720 WGN. We're talking to our own Ryan Burrow about a couple of stories that he's covered, national stories over the past week. We touched on Aurora, Jussie Smollett. Wow, Ryan, that's just the story that keeps on giving.
You know, it was a story that just didn't make sense to most of us from the get-go. The story just, the thought of two people walking around at 2 degrees below zero temperatures, plotting an attack on someone who they knew with bleach, with a rope.
Right, in a nice area of the city.
In a very nice area of the city where we don't see that kind of crime. Now, does that mean that kind of crime doesn't happen? No, it doesn't mean that at all, but mm-hmm. It just seemed very, very strange. And as we started you know, peeling away more and more, and police were very helpful with information on that. You know, we came to the conclusion that there was something off about this story, and that's what continued to feed this. Now, it was a tough, it's been a tough story to cover because, A, you never want to challenge a victim's story, right? I mean, if someone was attacked,
right,
you want to believe that story. There's no reason not to, but there were just some things that didn't make sense in the story. Number two, the thought that, you know, the Trump administration or MAGA was pulled into all this made it very intriguing as well. Well,
mm-hmm.
What was it about that? We know that area. It doesn't exactly seem like, I don't want to say it's not MAGA country.
Right.
We don't know how everyone votes, but it just doesn't really fit what we expect for that area.
No.
And then, you know, as it continued to develop and the words that Smollett was using and some of the things that police were saying, you know, we found out that police actually were talking to these two men, and their story did not match up with Smollett's. And here we are at this point, and now he's charged.
Right. And you know what? I do want to say, I think there was a great partnership between police and the media with regard to this story, because we all knew that something was fishy from the very beginning. And what's troubling, or I guess a little disheartening, is just different comments that people will post on social media, like, well, the media will chase any story, or the police, you know, put X amount of detectives on this. And as I think you said it perfectly, Ryan, if a Hollywood actor, if anybody says that they're attacked in this nice area in Streeterville with an attack like this, of course it's going to be newsworthy. And then
we've got some city pride too, right?
Yeah, I mean, absolutely.
We don't want this to happen in our backyard.
Of course.
We can't imagine it, so we want to sniff it out and figure it out.
Absolutely. So you did a great job on that. I know that's not the end of the Jussie Smollett case as well. He has been charged. And R. Kelly, boy, there was this story started out many, many years ago with all these allegations and then the documentary, and then it hits right in our own backyard because this is where a lot of these charges are alleged to have happened, the abuse of the young girls. And now it just is growing from there. And it did turn into a little bit more of a media circus today when he bailed out.
Yeah, he finally got the $100,000 that he needed to get out of jail. His attorney was there, you know, and part of this spectacle too is all of the attorneys involved in this. Obviously, Michael Avenatti, very boisterous, very high profile. Steve Greenberg, his Chicago attorney, not afraid to back down from a challenge, that's for sure, and
right.
Definitely give some stuff to the media that all those sound bites you'll hear over and over again. We know Gloria Allred is involved from the New York aspect and with some of the victims. So you've got some high-powered attorneys. You obviously have a pretty big celebrity, although we're learning more and more his finances aren't quite in order. And he's really struggled to make ends meet. Now, I don't know if anyone's feeling sorry for him, but, he's got $170,000 he owes on that studio, $160,000 in back child support payments. We would have figured that a celebrity would be
sure.
In and out, you know, posted bond right away. But no, he spent 3 days in custody waiting for this moment when he could finally come out. And of course, we were all waiting for him on his way out as he, pushed his way into the van and got out and then went to, I don't know if it's called the Rock and Roll McDonald's anymore.
The McDonald's in River North. Yeah, I think that's where, which is when the helicopter started following him, there was a part of me that thought, oh no, don't do that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then now he's at the cigar bar. Briggs Cigar Bar. So he's been kind of chased around town. And very similar to Smollett, I mean, the helicopters tracked him to the Empire Studio as soon as he was released in almost an exact same scenario. It was weird, Andre. I was in the exact same courtroom.
Right.
two times in 3 days for hugely popular and important cases in the Chicago area. It was very strange. Same judge, same rules in the courtroom, same
wow.
scenario, same situation. It was wild.
It's got to be exciting though as a reporter to cover stories like this with such that do get such high profile attention. You know, it's a little bit of a rush.
Yeah, every day it's, you know, it's like you're trying to thread a needle and figure out how am I going to accomplish all of this in one day. And it's
right.
not usually until probably Wednesday or Thursday we'll all look back and go, my goodness, we somehow got all of that news and information on the air. You know, right now it still feels a little fresh and I'm still kind of on edge that something's going to happen with R. Kelly or Smollett
right.
or something.
Overnight,
you know,
yeah.
Exactly.
You got to sleep though, Rye.
Oh my gosh, you know, the phone, it never stops.
Do you ever silence your phone or only on vacation?
You know, I'm pretty good at night at at shutting it down. But no, these last couple weeks, it's been rough. I try to limit myself to 3 hours a day on my phone, and I've got this little timer, and these 2-3 weeks have just blown it out of the water. I'm in like 3-4 hours. I've cut myself a little bit of slack, but I've got to get back on a good schedule, because, you know, when you stare at your phone all day, it kind of poisons you a little bit. You got to pick your eyes up and you know, not live in the internet bubble. You've got to live life a little bit.
That's right. Enjoy the world. Ryan, thank you so much.
Take care.
Get some sleep. It's what I always tell you to do.
That's right.
That's the great Ryan Burrow. We will come back after this break and get you a quick newscast and talk to Tamon Bradley with the latest mayoral poll next on WGN.
What happened? What's happening? What's yet to come? It's Andrea Darlis and the reporters on 720 WGN.
7:36 in the evening. Thanks for being with us. We are going to the polls tomorrow in Chicago to elect a new mayor. WGN-TV political reporter Tamon Bradley, who's been a guest on this show before, joins us tonight with a little bit of an update on tomorrow's election. Hi, Tamon.
Hey, Andrea. You ready?
I'm ready. How about you? I know this is typically your day off, and you're working it. You're working 24/7.
Oh, yeah, and we're probably headed to a runoff, so I'll be in this more intense mode over the next month. April 2nd is when we're scheduled to have the runoff contest.
I think so. I definitely think we are headed toward a runoff. Who will be in the runoff, though, is anybody's guess at this point. You did a story throughout the day, Tamon, that shows a little bit of repositioning here for the top three candidates, at least according to the latest Change Research poll.
Yeah, possibly. This is a solid poll, Andrea. 706 people, that's good. The margin of error is 3.7%. That's good as well. And it shows a three-way tie for first place. Lori Lightfoot, Bill Daley, Tony Preckwinkle, all with 14%. Susana Mendoza, 10%. Gary Chico, 9%. Willie Wilson, 9%. Jerry Joyce, 8%. That's really fascinating. Certainly Preckwinkle and Daley have come on the top of the public polling that we've seen. But Lori Lightfoot has really been climbing. There was an NBC poll 2 weeks ago that showed her climbing up to about 10%. And so now it appears, according to this poll, that she's tied with the front runners. That's a real factor. Obviously, Susana Mendoza, she's got to be disappointed if she doesn't make the runoff. You look at where she started this campaign. You look at her strength. You look at her strong name ID, the fact that she was on television in prime time after Governor Pritzker was elected back in November. And you look at her taking on Bruce Rauner over the last couple of years. For her to not make the runoff would be a remarkable thing to happen. And that's something that we're going to be watching closely. But Lori Lightfoot, look, she got the Chicago Sun-Times endorsement. She's had other endorsements. Alderman Scott Bogusback has come out in support of her. And so that helps her for people who are looking for a progressive candidate in this race. And so we'll see what happens. I mean, Andrea, I kind of think that the front runner's support is understated. I can't help but think back to Pritzker in the primaries.
Yeah.
We saw Chris Kennedy coming on strong there at the end. And in fact, that contest wasn't even close because Pritzker's support was understated. And so I think that could be true for Preckwinkle and Daley as well.
I think you're right, Tamon. And Preckwinkle, Lightfoot, Wilson are popular candidates among Black or African-American voters. Chico Mendoza lead among Hispanic and Latino voters. And what I found a little bit interesting with this most recent polling, Tamon, is that among female voters, Preckwinkle and Daley are leading the field. And among male voters, Lightfoot and Bill Daley. So that's perhaps where Lightfoot is getting that most recent boost.
This poll shows Lightfoot with remarkable strength. In fact, among white voters, she ties Daley, 17% support. If she's able to do that, she's likely to be the next mayor of the city of Chicago. So, you know, it's a poll.
Right.
It's one small sample. You know, if she can perform as well as this poll indicates, she's in the mix. She's got a real shot. And you're right. Lightfoot beats Daley and Preckwinkle in a head-to-head. Daley defeats Preckwinkle in a head-to-head. What I also found interesting, too, the undecideds, if they were forced to choose who they would vote for, 46% of Mendoza's voters chose Daley as their second choice. So if
really?
She's not in the runoff, and if she can get her supporters to go for Daley, Daley's in good shape. Preckwinkle's got some ground to make up if she's in the runoff, and conventional wisdom suggests that she will be, she's going to have to fix that. They're going to have to make the case that this is a choice. And, you know, obviously it was the Daley family that's partly responsible for Chicago being how it is today.
Right. And the other names that are in the race, too, of the other 14 candidates, I found this too interesting to mind. Among early voters, Vallis pops into this one. So it's Bill Daley and Paul Vallis in the lead among early voters. And then you get Jerry Joyce's name popping in to that early voting mix as well in third.
Yeah, that's fascinating. Jerry Joyce has a lot of money and he's been up on TV. I think that's helped him a lot. Paul Vallis, over the last couple of weeks, has been able to find his way on television and in newspaper coverage of the Daley back and forth. And so that has helped him, I think. But you look at the poll, he's only at 6%. And so obviously that's not going to get it done. And something else that I'm watching, so the campaigns always have their big election night party at a fancy hotel or something like that. He's having his party at his campaign headquarters. So very modest. You know, he doesn't have a lot of cash, but that's a sign that he thinks that it's probably a long shot.
Wow. And what do you think about I know the early voting numbers were down, Tamon. What do you think, I guess if you could prognosticate tomorrow, we have clear skies, 33 degrees. These are typically low turnout elections. Do you anticipate that it'll probably be a low turnout tomorrow?
Hard to tell. I think a lot of people were making up their minds, right? Like, so this poll only had a small number of undecided voters, so that made it a solid poll. But we had polls as recent as a couple weeks ago where about 20% of the electorate were figuring out what they wanted to do. And then there were so many people that requested the mail-in, vote-by-mail ballots, but they hadn't returned them. As of this morning, it was something like 60,000 people who hadn't returned their vote-by-mail ballots. And so the sense is those folks were figuring out who they were going to vote for. And you can actually bring your ballot for people who haven't done that. You can bring your ballot to the poll place tomorrow if you want. It's really hard to determine. The election officials are going to have to count those mail-in ballots. So if this is a close contest, as these polls are suggesting, we may not know the outcome. We may not know the two candidates moving on to the runoff tomorrow night.
Tamon, I just got three text messages. I'm not kidding you. One from the 773, one from the 312, and then someone from the 630 texting in asking, what about Amara? And then the 630 said that this person is a younger voter, not interested in the race, but likes Amara. Does she have any sort of a shot?
You know, she was doing a radio show in New York. I don't know if she actually was in New York or if she just called in. I didn't see her on the campaign trail today. You know, the candidates, they invite you to come and cover their events so that they can get on television. And that didn't happen the day before the election. That was a little strange. Look, I think people think she's really smart. She performed well at the forum. She's got a lot of young supporters.
Yeah.
But I know she had budgeted for a $3 million campaign, but she's not been able to top the $1 million mark in fundraising. And so that I think that really hurt her. She only got on TV a couple weeks ago. It would have helped if she could have run television commercials a little bit sooner. So right now, all signs point to it being a difficult night for her. But I think we'll hear from her again.
I think so, too.
Why she didn't run for alderman.
Yeah, I think you're right, Tamon. I think she's a name that we're going to continue to hear throughout our years here, too, in Chicago. Where will you be stationed tomorrow night for election night for Channel 9?
So I'm back in the studio at our headquarters providing analysis. We'll have our full team, we'll have our reporters covering the top candidates. We'll have someone at the Board of Election. And so you'll see me on set with Paul Lisnick and some special guests, Michael Mater, Joe Donlin anchoring our coverage. And we're going to start at 7 o'clock right after the WGN Evening News. And we'll stay on until, hopefully all of the races are called. But again, maybe we won't know the outcome of some of these close contests, but we expect to be on pretty late. That's what we can do at Channel 9, so I certainly hope folks watch.
Absolutely. Watch Channel 9, listen to WGN Radio, and check out Tamon on social media and WGN TV as well. So, Tamon, thank you so much. Get a little bit of sleep before tomorrow night.
I'll try. I've got some homework to do.
You bet. We'll talk to you soon.
Okay, take care.
All right, sounds good. That's the great Tamon Bradley from WGN-TV. So I guess at this point it's anybody's race. Lori Lightfoot, Bill Daley, Tony Preckwinkle, the top three in the most recent Change Research poll. But again, 14 candidates, this is anybody's race. We will check in on the WGN-TV front with Dina Baer. She is on her way back to Chicago from the Vatican after covering the pre-sex abuse summit that was going on all week. She has done amazing reporting, and we will touch base with her and see what came out of all of that next on 720 WGN.
It's Andrea Darlis and the reporters on 720 WGN.
We are so proud to be joined on the line now by WGN-TV's Dina Baer, who has been at the Vatican for the past week covering the summit of clergy abuse at the Vatican. Dina, first of all, what a difficult assignment. Very harrowing. The packages that we've been watching you do, not just this week, but over the years on this story that you've been following so passionately, have just been so moving. Tell us a little bit about what you were doing there this week, Dina, at the Vatican.
Well, we were covering the Protection of Minors Summit at the Vatican. And it was bishops who were the presidents of the bishops' conferences from the Catholic Church around the world. There were 180 of them who were there, and they were tasked with coming up with a way to prevent clergy sex abuse, to uncover some of the sex abuse that has been happening in the church. And I think the one thing that people were really most concerned about was it seemed like a lot of talk, and there were a lot of critics there and victim survivors who showed up that were marching, and they were worried about the fact that this was theater and that there was nothing that was going to come out of it. And in the final analysis, there really were no marching orders for the bishops to go back to their home countries, but there was an incredible realization. When we first got there, I was shocked to find out that a lot of the bishops around the world basically thought this was an American problem, that this was not something that was happening in the church globally. And then they heard victims talking, victims from Australia, victims from Italy, victims from Germany, victims from America, and they realized that this was a bigger problem than anyone knew. And one of the biggest problems was the fact that it was covered up. The German bishop who spoke, Mark, said that in many cases, the files were destroyed or it was never written down when victims came and tried to report the abuse in the church.
Wow.
And I think that realization, I could tell, really moved a lot of these religious leaders. Let's hope that that means the future is going to be better.
Absolutely. And as I said, your pieces, the packages that you put together this week were so moving. I know you're at the airport right now. You're heading back to Chicago. But talk a little bit about the piece that you did with the young violinist. You started off the package with, we're hearing his beautiful music, and he was so impactful, and so was your interview with him.
I have to tell you that Mike D'Angelo, who is our photographer, is the most amazing talent on the planet. And none of the work that I do would be half as good without him. And he is able to weave through the sound of this man playing this soulful violin. It sounded so pained when you listen to it. And then you listen to his story of abuse and how he talks about his life was changed and how he talked about he wanted to die after this. But then he realized that the only way to maybe save someone else is to speak out. And that's why he was one of the few victim survivors. There were only two who stood there before the bishops. Others presented their testimony via videotape. And so we didn't even get to see those. We just saw the transcripts of them. And on my story, I put the words up on the screen because that's all we knew. This man, though, to look in his eyes, to see him touch his heart when he talked about the pain that he was going through, that really is so powerful. And I think it embodies when you see someone who was hurt by this abuse that had been committed and covered up for decades, then you say something has to be done. And I think that larger feeling about wanting to demand change is what prompted this meeting, and hopefully is what is really going to prompt and affect some real transformation in the church.
Dean, as reporters, I know we cover so many stories that affect us and affect us, EFF and AFF. Is it hard to cover a story like this that you're so passionate about but can truly just really touch you, just really affect you in the heart?
Andrea, I am a Catholic myself. I went to Catholic school for 12 years. I teach Sunday school. I give out communion at Mass. This breaks my heart. It really does. And I have to separate myself from those personal feelings to cover it. But I feel like I'm able to cover it in a way that I understand the church well. And I hope that I can bring the story to all the Catholics who want to know and really want there to be some difference from the way things have been over the years. And so I find myself being a reporter.
Yeah.
And then at the end of the night, as I lay my head down on my pillow after an 18-hour day in Rome because of the time differences and trying to cover stories for WGN here, and then just in tears about what you hear happened and the realization and the acceptance of it, and then the hope that there will be some kind of effort to make sure it doesn't happen again.
You tell such a passionate and powerful story. I know you've been the religion reporter for Channel 9 for how many years now, Dina?
Oh, my goodness. Probably, I have been covering the Catholic Church since Cardinal Bernardine. I was in Rome when Cardinal George was first appointed to be Archbishop, when he got the pallium, when he was elevated to Cardinal. And we had a private Mass with Pope John Paul II, now St. John Paul II, and then through Cardinal Blaise Cupich. So I'm thinking 25 years. Am I dating myself?
Not at all. You started, you were a child reporter. You do.
Yes, let's just say that.
Are these your favorite stories to cover? I mean, I know you've covered so many stories over the years, and you're the midday anchor, I know, now at Channel 9. But are these your favorite stories to cover? Because you actually get a little bit more than 30 or 45 seconds to tell the story.
Well, that's what I love. I think the beauty of WGN is we are able to tell a story in its entirety. We're not limited to a minute 30 or 2 minutes like other stations might be. We filed that story that you're talking about with the victim survivor who was playing the violin at the Mass with the bishops at the end of the Protection of Minors Summit. And that story was 5.5 minutes.
It was wonderful. So, I loved it.
Most places you wouldn't be able to do that. And that is really, I think, refreshing and gratifying because we don't have to cut out something that we know would be really impactful for people to see. So in that vein, I love doing this.
Yeah.
I really do. And I do love to be able to bring people here for something that might be so important in their lives, but obviously they wouldn't be able to be here. I mean, we were in the Angelus at St. Peter's Square when the Holy Father comes out, as he does on Sunday, to give his blessing. And this time it was different. This time he spent 5 minutes or so talking about how it's all of our responsibility to protect minors, and it's all of our responsibilities, whether it be sex abuse in schools or other areas, or coaches or sports or the church, that part of the way to really make a difference is to get involved. Don't just say, I'm sad that this happened and I'm turning away. If it happened in the church, make sure it doesn't happen again.
Dina, what story is, I know you're going to cap your flight in a few seconds here. What story is next for you? What's out there that you still want to pursue, that you still want to chase, whether it's a passion or a story that you just want to follow up on or continue to follow up on? What's out there for you, your goal story?
Oh, boy. Well, with regard to this story, I want to follow up. I want to see, is there going to be change? Are there going to be specific things that are going to be done? Are bishops going to report to law enforcement? Is there going to be zero tolerance when it comes to sex abuse? And that is something that we're not going to forget just because this summit is over, that we're going to continue to follow this. And in my day-to-day life, when I'm not covering religion, I as you know, am the medical reporter at WGN.
Yes.
And that's a real passion for me as well, because I feel like if I could bring the latest technologies to people and ways to make their life easier and even say, there but for the grace of God go I, because you see other people that have been through so much pain, I think that that really is so gratifying. I meet people who have been through so much and are so positive. And I think every day, boy, we are so fortunate. We are all so fortunate. There are so many blessings in our lives. And so that I just love doing every day. So there's not necessarily one story, but it's continuing to do those stories and tell those stories.
Well, you're an incredible reporter. You're an amazing person. And thank you so much for taking time out. I know you're probably jet lagged and you've been going doing these 18-hour days, but thank you for calling in, and get home safely.
Oh, you are so kind, Andrea. Thank you so much.